Hi, it's Nicole Van Zanten from the Vancouver Canucks, and you're listening to C4CHB.
Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Welcome to the 10th episode of C4CHB. That's Chris and Clay's Canucks Hockey Commentary. As always, I am Chris Golden at Lightforce on Twitter, joined by Clay Emo.
Yes, I'm at Canuck Clay on Twitter. Missing this. We skipped a week last week. It's been 3 weeks since our last
one. It has been 3 weeks, but you know what threw us off was Burre.
He did.
Yeah, we got all mixed up. We had to do something for Burre, and now we're really off our schedule.
But if we get the guest that we have today by waiting one more week, I think it's all worth it. But we'll get to her in a second. Who else we got normally?
You normally have Matt Lee at MattLee980. Thank you for inviting me back, Chris, after all the things we've gone through together.
Well, I appreciate you're here. And in fact, when Clay was talking to a special guest, I thought he was talking about you, but he's right.
I'm not special anymore.
Not so much.
And he's not even a guest anymore.
No, he's like
part of it.
It should be like C4CHB plus M.
Let's work on that.
This is getting too long then.
I know, but I don't know how we work you
into our
I think
it should just be
monitor.
M4CHB or something.
M4CHB.
I don't know.
Oh.
All right, Matt, who do you got with us today?
We have friend of the show, Nicole Van Zanten from the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah!
Woo! All right.
What a warm welcome.
So how do our listeners who don't know you, all six of them.
Six, oh gosh.
Wait, we have six listeners or we have six people that don't know her?
Well, we have six listeners, and actually, you know what, the two of them maybe don't know you.
There you go. Well, I run the Canucks Twitter account. So, at Van Canucks on Twitter. Personal account is at Nicole Van Zanten, if you can spell that one correctly.
That's NicoleVanZanten.
There you go.
And, Nicole, are your followers basically pretty equivalent, like the Van Canucks and then at Nicole Van Zanten,
oh,
like pretty
gosh.
Close?
No. Okay. Not at all.
You know, why aren't you Nicole Van Canucks?
That's a good question.
That is a good
or
question.
Or Canucks Van Zanten.
It's so clever that it
so
should be
pressure.
Nicole Van Canucks.
Yeah, like that. That would be kind of cool. I don't know. I just thought of that.
Good one.
No, it wasn't that good.
It's like it was meant to be.
I don't like Nicole. She's picking on me already.
Then she can buy me.
Then I like Nicole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, where'd your mustache go?
It fell off. Much to Marnie's pleasure, it disappeared yesterday because Movember's over. And although I'm told that December is now known as December beard.
December?
Like, what? December beard? I don't know.
It's the first I've heard.
Well, no, some dude on Facebook was like telling me, oh, you shaved off your mustache. You're supposed to grow a beard for December beard or something like that.
I think that's just the guy's trying to start a thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I think
am
that
not
guy
growing
likes
a beard. Oh, could be. And I... You know, when the Canucks went on that big run, I had a pretty wicked beard. Trust me, it's the worst thing to have ever grown. And I hate playoff beards. I really do because it like gets to the summer now when the NHL's over.
I actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because you grew all six, you know, hair.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, not at all. You've been working on your playoff beard since, like...
Last playoffs.
Yeah, no.
I haven't
let go. Since
the
Stanley Cup run.
Yeah.
You like your beard so much.
Matt, do you own a razor?
I have a razor. Clay?
Yes.
Before we all continue to bash me at
yes.
a constant rate here.
Yes.
You had a cup speed stacking contest.
Yeah, my middle son, Jacob, he's not as big of a Canucks fan as the other son, Sean, but he knows his stuff, but he instead of watching Canucks games, he takes up cool hobbies. He started with balloon art about a year ago, and now he's moved on to speed stacking. So yes, that is the cycle, the crazy hands, the fast hand-eye coordination. And together, we put together the first ever Emo Family speed stacking tournament on the weekend at our place.
Who won?
A young man named Daniel from Langley took two buses and one SkyTrain to get there, so it was a feel-good story. And he won with a time of about 18 seconds, demolished seven other competitors. We seeded them, we had a tournament bracket, it was all good. And we're gonna
So what seed was he in?
He was actually the number one seed, so it all worked out.
The number one contender.
Yeah. And so he finished about 18 seconds. Jake can do it in about 10 seconds. World record holder can do it in about 4.5.
So if he did it in 8 and Jake can do it in 10, how come Jake didn't win?
No, Daniel does it in 18. And
18,
and
I mean, 10. Sorry, yeah.
No, and then as the bonus, when Daniel won, he got to play against Jake in a special little...
And who won that?
Jake pummeled him.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did Jake give him a handicap at all?
No, actually, Jake should have. He should have, like, ran upstairs and come down.
I thought he was
going
to do a blindfolded or something.
Yeah, or one hand, or, you know, standing on one leg. But we'll have to work that in for the next one. We're going to get Nicole to the next one. Nicole, you in?
Yes, absolutely.
You have tried it before.
I have tried
Not bad for a beginner.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then we'll do it at the CHB Christmas party, I think. Speed sacking competition.
Oh, that'll be a mess. We got Liz.
How into the contest, how far into the night are we going to be?
Yeah, well, it depends. And depends. I think I can picture a JJ versus Matt final.
You know what? I want to see Liz Kegstand Moffitt take on JJ.
I think any combination would be good. But thank you.
Before we get into our regular features, there is one very, very important announcement I'd like to make, guys. We were talking about this a little bit earlier on, but we have a contest here on C4CHB. That's right, a contest for two Canucks tickets. And they're very special tickets. Very, very special tickets. In fact, you could say they are sweet tickets, couldn't you?
Oh, that was actually really clever.
Yeah. It was. Well, occasionally I am clever, as we found, and then I try hard, and then it doesn't work out.
Is that because they're just going to eat candy all night?
You have to find the line between clever and just corny.
So like Clay asking about eating candy.
Clever?
Yeah. Silence is bad for podcasts. But yeah, no, we have a contest. We'll talk a little bit more about it later on. But simply put, we've got two tickets to join us, CHB, I think a few others, in a suite. We're talking suite. We're talking 500 level. We're talking up where the air is thin. And you get to join us, watch the game from above.
Drinks and refreshments?
Could be, I don't
know.
Nicole,
can you break that down for us? Do you know? Can you confirm or deny?
TBD. How about that?
TBD.
TBD.
There's a possibility.
Tell you what, if you win this contest, it's you bring the drinks and the refreshments and we'll join you.
Sunday night, December the 22nd, as the Canucks host the Winnipeg Jets.
Wow. I believe that's for the first time since the Jets left the NHL. Am I mistaken?
Well, it would be hard to host them while they were not in the NHL.
No, but their first year back was the lockout season, was it not?
Yeah, and I don't think the Jets came to town.
No, because they were in the East. So this will be the first time since they've been back in the
NHL.
That's
a pretty good game.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty excited.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, okay.
Will the elevator be in operation at the time?
Yeah, that's actually important. Will the elevator work? Because I don't do stairs.
I can confirm the elevator will be in order. Like, no stairs are needed.
Okay, because I did 5 stories of stairs last time I had to go to a suite. And I kid you not, the Canucks almost had a lawsuit being thrown at Island because I was about to have a heart attack.
We thought we were going to lose Chris.
Yeah, it was touch and go. It was touch and go. Clay,
we'll have them ready.
Clay,
we'll
help
them
me
ready
up.
For you.
It was looking bad though.
There's a warning, so there may be exercise involved.
May be exercise involved, but if the elevators are working, it's a great game to come see. You'll join us, and as you said, we'll talk a little bit about this. But that's right, 2 tickets courtesy of the Vancouver Canucks to join a few of us in a suite, 500 level, to watch the Winnipeg Jets on December 22nd.
Rewind.
And now, a flashback to the week that was for the Vancouver Canucks.
Booth scores! David Booth! A spin back by David Booth and throw it through the maze of players. One in front, here's Booth at the side, he deeks and he scores! David Booth, put it on the backhand. He scored in 2 straight games. He gets Vancouver on the board. To square. Hurricanes have 5 shots in the period already. It is just over a minute old. Here's a chance at the other end of the ice. Loose puck at the side. They score. It just got over the line. It'll be Ryan Kessler's goal as he makes it 3-2 Canucks.
So, boys and Nicole... The Vancouver Canucks are currently 2-1 on their 4-game road trip. They're now up to 9-5-2 on the road, which actually gives them the second most wins in the West. We're going to go all the way back to last week when the Vancouver Canucks took on the Ottawa Senators. They scored 3 goals for only the 4th time in 13 November games. And among those scorers is David Booth. I was watching you the whole time, Clay, as I said that.
At the Canucks tweet up. That was the Canucks tweet up game.
Was it? Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yep.
So were you there to see see Clay's
reaction? No, I was there at the... Clay nearly fell out of his chair. He's like, is that Booth? Oh my God, that was Booth. And his son Sean was there. And he's like, no, Dad, I don't know. It might have been tipped in. No, it's got to be Booth. It's got to be Booth.
And Chris, what jersey was I wearing that night?
Oh, you were wearing the Canuck Clay David Booth jersey. Yeah. He was up there. He was showing off. Hey, guys, look, I got a David Booth jersey. I should win tickets. And all sorts of other crazy stuff. He was so excited.
I have to wear that jersey just... while he's doing well.
Yeah, while he's here?
While he's doing well. That's all I'll
while
say.
While he's here.
Well, he has
and
to
not
be
in
here
Utica.
Well. Yes.
I just was worried, though, because he was celebrating as if Booth had got the goal, and it did appear that it could have been tipped in, and I was going to feel really horrible if they found out it wasn't a Booth goal and Clay had to go and, like, you know, walk around the tweet up with egg in his face.
It was a good second period, though. It was a good vibe at Boston Pizza. Good crowd. You know, early start, so it took a while for people to get there, but once they did... it's a good time.
And just on the note of the Canucks tweet-ups, two wins, two tweet-ups. I think there's a trend here.
Wow. Nicole, schedule more.
Yes. Yeah. When is the next tweet-up going to be?
Next one will be December 19th.
So we can pencil a win in for that one.
There you go.
Regardless of who they're playing.
Sorry, it was December 19th where, though?
In North Vancouver, the Esplanade Boston Pizza location.
There we go.
Who are they playing that night? It's got to be like a great Western rival. Like, if they're playing the Blackhawks and they win, then we know that the streak is for real.
It looks like they're playing the Stars.
Yes, yeah. 5:30 start.
So guaranteed win.
There you go.
Problem for the Vancouver Canucks is after they took that win against Ottawa, they laid a big egg against the Rangers on Broadway on Saturday morning in the matinee game. First of all, Chris, what were you doing on Saturday morning?
Saturday morning, I was actually watching a little football, but not the American kind.
What?
Well, I was watching... You guys don't listen to me. I was having to watch soccer, because I was over at the in-laws, and, you know, my...
Oh, that's right. Your
father-in-law is a Brit. Yeah.
So you didn't see the game?
Well, I saw a little bit of the game. I saw it late. By then, it was already 3-0, and...
ooh.
Yeah, I was hoping for a comeback.
Okay, but I guess this will go to Nicole. This was John Tortorella's return to New York for the first time since he would have been fired as the head coach of the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. Did the game get the hype that it should have got?
Well, I mean... they did face New York earlier on in the season, so I do think that the hype was a little bit removed, and they were in New York pretty quickly for this game, so it wasn't as if they had a couple days there and could really relish the moment. So, my personal perspective, no, it did not receive the hype it deserved.
But how does an early game on a Saturday get hype?
It doesn't, and I guess... but there should have been some sort of lead-up towards it, because they had a whole day on Friday to pump this game up. And the fact is, John Tortorella didn't even get a mention, I believe, at Madison Square Garden, did he?
Well, not from what I saw, no. They flew in.
Because Vigneault got a mention when he came to Vancouver, did he not? So what does that tell you about what fans thought of John Tortorella?
Well, they started heckling him at the game later on when it was well out of hand.
Well, mm-hmm. It was certainly well out of hand. Of course, if you missed it, Chris Kreider scoring a hat trick against those Vancouver Canucks, and that was en route to the 5-2 win. And Sunday's game was the very next day. Another morning game versus the Hurricanes.
Earlier game.
Another early game.
Don't ask me about that one. I was on the ferry.
Thank you. Clay?
It was nice to see Vancouver get out to a good start. The two goals in the first period, very rare for the team. But then it almost collapsed in the second period when Carolina came out with their two goals.
In two shots.
Within 10 seconds of each other.
Yes.
But Ryan Kessler saved the day by scoring a mere 27 seconds after Carolina's second goal to give us our rightful lead back. And basically, they held on it for the rest of the game.
Now, how deflating is that if you're playing on the road towards the end of a road trip and the opponent is down 2-0, so you're carrying a 2-0 lead early into the second period, and for them to score two quick goals in a matter of 10 seconds, is that not take some of the wind out of the Canucks' sails?
Absolutely, and I can only imagine what the players were feeling as a fan watching it. I was actually saying, oh no, and here we go again, and just hoping that they could hold on. But they, to their credit, they with Kessler's goal, obviously, they fought through some adversity and made it work. But I can imagine that they're squeezing their sticks, hockey sticks, a little tighter for sure.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is the bigger picture of it. I mean, when the Canucks let in two quick goals like that, like you said, you're getting this haunting feeling that I honestly hadn't had for a couple years. Like in 2011, if the Canucks fell down two goals, I wouldn't be too worried, but we're at that point now where if they let in two quick goals in quick succession, I get that panicky, haunting feeling like they're going to find a way to blow the game. So I guess my question to you, Chris, is do you worry about the Canucks' ability to mentally overcome those hurdles?
In 2011, as you brought up, no, because the Canucks would win the game 4-2 if they went down two early goals. In this case here, where you get the two goals to tie it back up, there's every indication to me watching them play on the ice that, oh my God, the end is near, the sky is falling, at which point everything is done in a panic. It's almost the way the first few minutes of the second period went against Carolina. It was a complete panic both ways. And next thing you know, from there, it's a panic every so often, and we hold out to see a 3-2 win. But to whether they're mentally stable, I'd like to think they are. They can get over that. But it just doesn't appear to me, the fan watching on TV, that that's the case.
The story on the Canucks so far this season has been the race to three goals, has it not?
Well, they don't lose when they get three.
Yeah, they're 13-0-1 when scoring three or more. That lone overtime loss coming against the Penguins about a month ago or so. They're 0-10-15 when scoring two or less. I mean, those are polar opposites in terms of records. So what does that say about this team and how important it is for them to get three goals?
Well, if you think if you're a goaltender, if you're either Eddie Lack or Roberto Luongo, you're sitting there thinking, I got to board up the net if the Canucks aren't producing on the ice. And it's pressure for them. And I don't think we've seen them play very, very well when the pressure is, that strong. When the Canucks were successful, they won games 1-0, 2-1. Now, that was in a different era with a different coach, and I like how I use the word era because it was only as late as last year. But the point is that we, as fans, complained about the Canucks taking the foot off the gas and playing almost dead hockey, but we got wins, and we were apparently okay with that. Now that they're playing a lot more open, sort of run-and-gun style, the defense pinch, it's constant, they're not producing. It's almost backwards. I would actually, at this point in time, maybe prefer a little more structure.
Nicole, you were there a couple games ago when Luongo said that maybe this team needs to start winning some more 1-0, some more 2-1 games. Do you believe what he's saying there?
Mm-hmm. I do remember that scrum. That was a very interesting scrum. I think he was quite emotional after that game and definitely emotional about defense. I'm curious to hear how you guys feel about the defensive structure in the last quarter of the season, over a quarter. But Roberto Luongo definitely has the frustration, defense scoring, and there's a lot of pressure on him and Eddie Lack, as we saw in the Carolina game over the last little while.
More importantly, do you believe in both Luongo and Lack's ability to keep their team in it in those kind of games?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. I've mentioned before, I'm a glass half full individual, and I do think that Roberto Luongo is one of the more elite goaltenders in the NHL, but as with anything, as with any team, it's about the players around him. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the next stretch here.
The problem for me in with that, though, is it had been a long time since Luongo has had to consistently string together 2-1 and 1-0 wins. Like, the only time I can really think of off the top of my head that he was having to stand on his head on a frequent basis is in 07 when he first arrived to the Vancouver Canucks. So is he still capable of doing that? I want to believe he is, but I'm a little more unsold than Nicole.
I think he has the passion. I think he has the fire returned. And I do think that this partnership with Eddie Lack is a very solid partnership here.
I think you make a really good point, Nicole, about Eddie Lack, because although we haven't seen him play a lot yet, when he has played, he's played very well. And if he plays well, if the team, and if especially Luongo, has confidence that Eddie Lack is good, there's less pressure on Luongo. Luongo doesn't think he has to stand on his head every single game, play 70, 72 games. He knows that maybe he can get 60, 62, 64, and give Eddie Lack 18 to 22 games, and the team doesn't drop off that much. I think that's huge, and I think in the long run of the season, that's going to make Luongo better, that's going to make the team better. And it's just funny, you think of Eddie Lack, you think of some of these other backup goaltenders, so to speak, throughout the league. We're seeing a trend where a lot of these backups are doing really, really well. We don't have to go into all of them, but I just think Eddie Lack's one of those backups that are going to do really well.
And they're confident.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a very confident individual.
Well, I think statistically, they're even. I think their GAA and save, as of today, are equal, Eddie Lack and Roberto Luongo.
Again? You were like that last time, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Your point is that they're very similar statistics.
Yeah, I mean, numeric games, obviously, quite a bit different, but the point being is they're very much similar. I think this is sort of indicative, though, when you look at their lack of scoring, is the Canucks in previous years weren't getting... I mean, they got a fair number of goals on the even strength, but their power play was killer. That's how the Canucks punished you. They got onto the power play, they then produced. And we saw this significant stretch where the Canucks couldn't score a goal in the power play. Yet in the last, three games, the Canucks have a power play marker in each of them.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because I'm going to rattle off some useless statistics for you. The Canucks power play does indeed have a pulse. 1-for-3 versus Ottawa. 1-for-3 versus New York. 1-for-3 versus Carolina. And all of a sudden, I believe they were in 29th a couple weeks ago in the power play percentage. Now up to 26th in the NHL. It's dark days when we're complimenting how they're going from 29th to 26th. But it's still a positive nonetheless. So let's talk about that power play. They have Kessler, Daniel, Henrik, Garrison, and Edler on the top unit. Burrows, Higgins, Santarelli, Bieksa, and Ham Hughes. Does anyone have a problem with the units and how they look like?
I don't have a problem if they're producing.
Okay.
I think the second unit is the problem that has an issue.
Is it the pushover unit? It seems like the second unit is cobbled together of the best available players from what's not the first unit. Is that a fair assessment?
All except for Burrows. Currently. I know we'll talk about him probably
so
later on.
So at what
the show.
Point, and I know Clay wants to chime in on this, at what point does David Booth start getting a look on the power play?
I did see him at the end of the Ottawa game, or in the third period of the Ottawa game. Of course, the game was a little bit out of hand. But David Booth did get a bit of power play time. It's all confidence, I think, with any player. Yes.
But David Booth earned that time.
That's what I'm saying.
In that Ottawa game, he was playing with confidence. Yeah. I don't have a problem because they're producing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if the time of overloading the first power play unit has since passed the Canucks. When that was introduced at work, now it doesn't seem to. And to me, the Canucks have had a second line. Arguably, whether it's a second line or not is debatable, but they've had a second line that's found chemistry and has become a cohesive unit. Why don't the Canucks have a power play unit that is their first forward line and a power play unit that's their second forward line? Defensively, you can mix that up.
So you're advocating that Kessler needs to be moved back down to the second unit?
I think that would be better, and frankly, anyone you put with the Sedins produces.
So you're saying bump Burrows up to the top unit?
Bump Burrows, yeah, like whatever that first line might be. I mean, we've seen Burrows been playing with the Sedins, but the point that I feel that needs to be made is Kessler's probably better suited on the second power play. Going back to the design it was before, it was the assistant coach that came in and changed the power
Newell
play.
Brown.
Thank you, Newell Brown. When he came in and we saw the overload, it was producing. Now it's not, and yet for whatever reason, the team has stuck with the overload.
Mm-hmm. Matt, this 1-for-3, 1-for-3, is it only get a goal if they have three power play? Anyways, so is that from the first unit? Can you recall?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. See, so to me,
I was going to ask, though. I mean, I think Jason Garrison has been on in at least a couple of those goals. So
yes.
How much of their success recently on the power play has to do with the fact that maybe Jason Garrison has found his way out of his funk?
Well, I don't think it was so much he was in a funk and so much as the entire power play unit was mm-hmm. the problem. I think it was Garrison only. Garrison was getting shots, yet they just weren't going in. He was missing the net. If you looked at the Canucks' power play when it was struggling, it was slow, predictable. They struggled to get it into the offensive zone if it wasn't dumped in. There didn't seem to be any setup. And yet when it was successful, there was speed and it was simple. Everyone knew that the puck was going to the point and that Garrison or Edler were unleashing fury. That was no surprise to any team, and yet they still were afraid to get in front of that puck. And to me, that serves to benefit the forwards who are much closer to the net and are looking for the rebound, the garbage, the dirty goals.
Half full, half empty. Analyzing which Canucks are overachieving, underachieving, too good, too bad, and why our analysis means absolutely nothing.
It's gonna be legend. Wait for it.
You guys miss me?
No.
No.
Thanks.
Well, I just want to say, with me, you keep promising and you never deliver.
Okay, I'll step my game up starting next time.
Well, you better, because you know what? We expect a lot out of you, Clayton.
No, we really don't.
That's true. We don't actually know.
What we get out of Clay, I'm pretty much happy with.
Thank you.
It's a bonus.
Well, she does look better. She does sound better. So really, why am I here, honestly?
See, if I take the handlebars off, I totally look like a predator.
Well, Matt started his November beer, but he started last November.
Worst prize ever. Did she just say it was pretty porn story?
Boring story.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I've always been told that I have a face for radio.
Dairy. Legendary.
So, I just want to point out that Nicole said that she is more of a half-full kind of perspective.
She did say that. Yeah.
And apparently that us, we might be a little half-empty.
I'm the king of half-empty.
But when we talk about half-full and half-empty, I think the biggest question mark of the year has been David Booth. And aside from Clay, who's been completely full on David Booth, I think we've been a little half-empty. He's pointless against Carolina, but has a goal and assist versus Ottawa, another goal against New York. You know, look at his ice time in those last three games. He's gone 13, 16, 11 minutes, respectively. And then he spent largely with Santarelli Richardson on the third line. So, outside of Clay, are the rest of us buying what David Booth's selling? Nicole?
David Booth has had a very interesting time this season. I mean, he was sent down, he was brought back up, he said he enjoyed his time there, but as soon as he came back up to the Canucks, I think he started producing. He got some very solid time on ice, and I've been impressed with what I've seen so far after he's been brought up.
Ugh,
I know,
admittedly,
I'm sorry.
I am buying it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But only because optimistically I want David Booth to start producing because I think he is a good dude and all that. It's kind of weird, but he's a good dude, and frankly, the Canucks need him to be producing. You know, you look, Zach Cassian has had a miserable year. Brad Richardson and Mike Santarelli can only fill the void for so long. So David Booth is one of those guys who the Canucks need to consistently be good. From what we've seen from him in these last three games, I think there's reason to believe that, yeah, maybe we're seeing a little bit more confidence from him. If you look at the goal he scored against Cam Talbot and the Rangers, it was a confident goal. And for him to drive to the net like he has, I don't think we have seen that for quite some time.
Not the power. Do you think that he is a third line?
Right now, he's still a very good third liner, but I don't think he's good enough to be a permanent fixture on the second line.
So why not throw him up with Steens?
How many times have we talked about this possible experiment? I agree. I don't know why he hasn't played more with Tortorella, but I mean, played more with Steens, but John Tortorella seems sort of hesitant to go there. I think he has to sort of earn that playing opportunity to play with the Sedins.
Hmm.
And I don't think he's quite earned it yet.
Clay, has Booth earned the time to be on the first line?
I'd say he's earned the time to be on the second line. Ooh, I would love to see him with, I'd love to see him with Kessler and Higgins again. Really would. And I'm surprised actually Tortorella hasn't gone back to that.
Get to the American Express?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Why not try it? Hansen's good, but I think Booth is playing more effective right now. More effectively. And I just think together with those two guys, that he has some chemistry. But I know they like to put Higgins with Santarelli. Like, I know all those you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, they're all kind of interchangeable, but I would love to see him get a shot in the second line. But no, as much as I like him, I think you're right. You guys are right. He's still got to earn his place on the first.
So I'm going to go sideways here, and Matt's going to kill me. But if those three get put together, is it the American Express or is it the HBK?
I am going to kill you for this.
I vote American Express.
American Express.
Clay?
HBK.
Yeah, HBK. It's got to be the hard
one. Old school wrestling
split
fans.
Down the middle.
Yeah.
And it's 2-2. And it's called C4CHB, so we win.
Yeah, we do.
Whatever.
But in talking about David Booth and him busting his slump, another player on the Canucks has actually seemingly busted his own slump. And that's Jason Garrison, who I was quite high on at the start of the season.
Yes, we are. I'm going to go dig that clip back up where he said he would get 50 points.
I think he said 55, actually.
Yeah, I probably did. I'm surprised I didn't even say it was in goals. But he was previously pointless in 14 games, goalless in 24.
You realize that's like a quarter of the season right
Yeah,
there.
You know what? The Canucks are just turning around. He's going to start like putting the puck in the net more often than not. But he's got 6 points in the last five games, bound to be a consistent producer. Or are we buying what Garrison's now selling, like I seem to buy at the start of the season?
He's left me so jaded.
Yeah.
Like, at the beginning of the year, I was agreeing. I thought maybe, he could get 50 points. But after that horrible, horrible run where he just wasn't producing, and again, like we talked about a little bit earlier, some of the power play failures have something to do with that. But it's just so frustrating to watch sometimes because he's got that great shot. And you'd think on the power play, he should at least be abusing that shot seven ways from Sunday. But it just hasn't found the back of the net enough for me.
Right now, he's averaging about a point every second game. He is -3, but his time on ice is not that bad.
Yeah.
And I do think that if he can perform the way he has over the last five or six games, we could be looking at the point total that you were referring to.
Sure, and yeah, like you said, he's getting the time and he's getting the power play time, which is the most important thing. So he's got a great opportunity to put up points. It's just, I think his success will go wherever the power play success goes.
Okay, fair enough, and I don't disagree, but I think if you look at the points, in a slump, he still produces 15 points in 29 games.
Yeah.
And so, really, he has only one direction to go right now, and that's up. So I'm going to hold myself to my 50 or 55 point prediction.
Well, you've already made your bed with that, so you have to stick with that prediction.
I will sleep in the bed that I have made. Clay, Garrison.
Yes.
50
are you,
or not?
Not 50, but I know, you know, his best season with the Panthers playing almost a full season was 33 points. I think he can easily get 33 this year. I anticipate him between 35 and 40, which is typically what our defense would do, unless we have an Ehrhoff or a good Edler year. But generally, the BX says, the Hamhuis says, they always wind up in that 35-40 point range, and I think that's where he'll wind up this year, too.
Mm-hmm. I miss Christian Ehrhoff.
Yeah?
Do you?
He made Edler look better.
Which, well, but case in point, I think there's
something... You get two productive defensemen for the price of one.
The problem, though, is was Edler made Edler because of Ehrhoff?
Yes.
And so Ehrhoff goes, and all of a sudden Edler's...
Yes.
Made. Nicole, do you miss Christian Ehrhoff?
I don't. Sorry, Matt. I don't miss Christian Ehrhoff. But I've always been an Alex Edler fan, so there you go.
See, and I've brought this up in the past. I'm wondering if there's more to the story, just watching sort of Edler's play, you know, whether it's the knee. I brought it up. This is like the third podcast in a row, and, you know, some the hit on Hurdle, the, you know, body checking Mike Smith behind the net. Just, it seems to me that there's something more with Edler, and I don't think it's Ehrhoff that's missing, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing on ice.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier, and I don't want to drag too much on it, but you said maybe it's a mental thing or a confidence thing with Alex Edler.
Yeah, like, and that's not to say that, he can't find it. It's just that, you know, things happen in bunches, and he's just having a real long
bunch. It's been a really long bunch of problems.
Yeah, well, so he's only -12 right now, you know.
It's worst on the team, Chris.
See, I'm being accused of being half empty, and Nicole's here, and I want to show her that occasionally we're half full.
Perfect. Well, not even looking at this year, though. His numbers last year were not exactly spectacular either.
Yeah, well, there's always next year.
But we do know one thing that he's confident in is taking a ton lashing from Torts. You see him just sit there, stoically looking ahead.
Sit there and take your medicine, Alex Edler.
You know,
I don't care how bitter it tastes.
And Torts did that to Hansen, too.
Yes.
Right? So, I wonder what that's like.
Who's next?
Yeah.
Burrows.
Oh, yeah. Probably.
Do you know that for sure?
No, I don't know that.
Inside information.
Yeah, no, like, I don't.
She knew.
It's like a schedule. On such and such a day, Torts will give Burrows a tongue lashing. But yeah, I think if we were to, you know, stress so much about slump busting, we don't have to worry, because we got the Dutch Gretzky. We got Dale Weiss, man. 4 points last six games, averaging over 8.5 minutes in blocking shots, playing on the penalty. Like, hey, how much more can we ask for Dale Weiss?
I love Dale Weiss.
Do you?
I think he's kind of he gives you that weird feeling, but I think he's a good player. He skates extremely well for a guy his size. And like you mentioned, he can hit, he can block shots. We've seen him on the penalty kill a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, what more can you ask out of a guy who plays as a third line, fourth line winger? I think he's shown he's capable of being an anchor on the third line when he's asked. He's played 14 or so minutes the last few nights, but he's only averaged 8.5 a year. So you're starting to see confidence from Tortorella in Dale Weiss.
I think he has a good attitude. I think you're right. His confidence is increasing. If he can stay injury-free, there's a lot of potential there. Yeah. But he's been very iffy in the first half.
That is correct.
And he's played very well since he came back from his most recent injury, speaking of injuries. So both Booth and Weiss coming into the lineup, they're working hard, they're skating hard, and I think their minutes will continue to rise as the Canucks continue to go. Yeah.
Rising minutes, and that could actually help, because we've seen Kessler, Hank, and Dan all play some seriously heavy minutes. I think right now, when you look at the top four in NHL, I think, was it Sid's number one, and then it's Hank, Daniel, Ryan?
That is correct. Henrik leads the league in even strength time on the ice, but overall, Crosby plays a lot.
But this isn't anything new.
Yeah, but when is the last time that these guys have finished with the highest time on the ice average in the league?
That's true.
In fairness, though, we also look at how the Canucks used to play. AV would run four lines out there. It was a system. It was very mechanical. Mm-hmm. Whereas Tortorella seems to run three lines with a fourth line that gets in there where it can.
He takes the bottom two lines and picks which one's playing the best that night, and he calls that their third line. I mean, I worry. Like, this is a legitimate concern for me, and I don't think it's getting talked about enough about, because need I remind everyone, this is still an Olympic year as well. The travel has already been pretty brutal as it is, and he's riding these guys like they're prized horses, and eventually these guys are going to lose some steam. Does anyone worry about this at all?
No, but who has the Ironman streak?
Yeah, it's Henrik, but...
Well, if you talk to any player, what is it they tell you they want more of?
More ice time.
But Matt, you seem genuinely perturbed.
I am genuinely perturbed.
You look genuinely perturbed.
They're averaging, like, what is it, 2 or 3 more minutes this season than they have in recent years. And eventually, those minutes add up. Like, don't get me wrong, playing 21 minutes, they can say as much as they want. They love playing as much as they can. And I think some of those extra minutes have come from being on the penalty kill this season. But again, they're not a bunch of 20-year-olds anymore this season. They're 34. Ryan Kesler have less of a problem playing lots of minutes because he's getting used in all situations. Well, the Sedins, they're not young. They're undoubtedly playing for Sweden at the Olympics. So there's going to be a ton of travel coming up in the second half of the season for them. So that's where I get worried about these minutes catching up to them.
So, okay, if we go and reduce their minutes, where do they go?
Well, yeah. Like we've talked about, Dale Weiss has shown he can play more than 8.5 a night.
Okay, so...
David Booth has shown he can play a little bit more.
So then you're saying let's give it to the third line. Because yeah, the second line is already carrying a heck of a load. They're all pushing over 19 minutes.
I think Richardson should get a little bit more minutes. What is he averaging here?
Yeah, Richardson's third line. Like, it really, the answer is we got to play the third line more or the fourth line more.
I think ideally, the first line should be playing maybe 18 minutes a night, 18 to 19. The second line should be getting about 15 minutes a night. And then the third and fourth line combined should be getting what's left, like 13 to 10 minutes for each of them.
Well, I mean, looking at their ice time right now, that's sort of how it pans out.
Well, someone's not getting enough ice time. Right?
I think it's whatever happens to be the fourth line.
Well, and I think that's been the problem for Tortorella this year. That's been his real bugaboo, is he's had trouble getting more from his fourth line. So somewhere along the line, this, whoever it is that's on the fourth line that night, has to start producing or at least delivering consistent minutes and showing that they are not a liability in their own end. Fair?
Fair enough.
I think it's fair. Come on.
I don't know. They can't play
21 minutes a night.
Where's your goal scoring going to come from?
Oh, that's the other problem, too.
See,
he's riding the horses, and he's getting the production out of them right now because they're playing so many minutes.
So you're worried that one of the horses will break a leg and we'll have to go put him down.
That's so sad.
It is. But
that's, I mean, putting it that way, yeah, that is a concern.
So I some of the Detroit is an example of a team that used to funnel minutes into their top players.
Sure.
So why would it work in Detroit, but it wouldn't work in Vancouver?
I don't know. I haven't checked the numbers on Detroit, but I'm sure that they had third and fourth lines that they could roll a little bit more.
Well, but they were situational. Like, it was very much a situational line. But their top two lines got big minutes. And many of those players were not young either.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite long in tooth. I'm not saying it was perfect, but to me, is it an issue yet? I haven't seen any indication. It doesn't seem to me that Henrik or Daniel or Ryan
I understand.
Tired.
It's not an issue yet, but it's an underlying one that I feel could creep up to them in February or March. That's my only concern.
Well, I guess when we get there,
I told you so when one of them breaks a leg.
So here's the solution. Canucks got to score more on the power play, less time spent on the power play, more time for the third and fourth line.
That is exactly what I'm
saying.
There
we go.
Okay. Well, talking about third or fourth line, Zach Cassian's been playing on those to when he has played, but Carolina, he was a healthy scratch, so how does he find his way back in the lineup?
And guess who scored as his replacement? Kind of. Not really.
No, it's true.
Kind of.
Is that Booth? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
Oh, Sestito?
No.
Zach Dalpe.
There you go. And he had a pretty solid game.
He was fueled by playing his old team, though, as well, I think, right?
He was, but isn't that the best fuel to get something going?
That is.
Cassian, he's pointless last four. He's -4 during that same period of time. We've seen him benched. Like, it just doesn't seem to me that Cassian's getting himself back into the game anytime soon.
He's still young.
Well,
He's still young.
And that's the thing. I have a theory is that as Canucks fans, collectively, we place some seriously crazy expectations. So Zach Cassian gets traded for Cody Hodgson. Yep. We had all these crazy expectations about Cody Hodgson, and somehow Zach Cassian was going to come in here and make them. He was Bertuzzi in his best years as a Canuck. And that's not the case. He's a young player who needed to find his game. He needed to play in the AHL to get ice time to develop, to mature, and then come up. We always hear the Canucks talking about the Detroit Red Wings as an organization and how they develop players, and yet time and time again, and I'm not saying that the Canucks as an organization do this, but we as fans almost place those expectations. It's no different than people saying, oh, we need Shinkarik in the lineup. We need Horvat in the lineup. They're kids. And so if we take these expectations away, I actually think Cassian is still growing as a player. I think it serves him purpose to be in the AHL with Utica.
They're kids, but they're playing in the National Hockey League. So you do have to treat them as if they are, you know, the 25, 30, 35-year-olds who are playing here.
Yeah, no, if he's up here, he needs to be treated that way. But to me, he's not ready to be here. Like, in my mind, Cassian's better served in Utica.
Well, I'm looking at this as a character-building year. He had the suspension to start off the season, right, with his stick swinging. Mm-hmm. And he's already been benched a couple times. And everything I've heard in the media so far, you know, hopefully you wouldn't expect anything different, but he seems mature enough. He seems like a good attitude enough. So maybe... And you look at the big picture, at the end of this year, we'll look back, yeah, he only played maybe 50 or 60 games as opposed to 75 or 80. And maybe you look at it as a character-building year because he's so young. So I have not given up on him.
Yeah.
I, you know, obviously I'm a little surprised that he's had so much trouble, but I really look at his youth. I agree with you, Nicole. Yeah, we got to treat them as men. But comparatively speaking, relatively speaking, he's still right at the start of his career. I'm just hopeful. Maybe I'm very optimistic.
Well, but you look at the Canucks right now, as they are today, when he's in the lineup or he's out of the lineup, are they a different team?
No, I don't think so.
No, so would it not be safe to say that for him, his development, his ability to mature and become a better player, that he's best served going to Utica, getting minutes, proving that he's a leader with that team?
Yeah, it's possible, but... It looks bad on management for them to do that, so I don't think that they would ever see that happen.
So in the effort to save a little egg on the face, let's go and continue to...
I think they would rather see Zach Cassian play his way out of any sort of funk than try to have him sent down to Utica.
And will he actually grow? Will he grow when he's down there? I saw him play for the Wolves before the Wolves became the Comets, more or less, and Cassian was dominating the team down there. So what does he have left to prove?
Exactly. And I think the other thing is sending a guy like Zach Cassian, who I already believe mentally is not ready for the NHL, sending him down to Utica, I think, sends a bad message to Zach Cassian that maybe the team doesn't have confidence in him and maybe he's thinking to himself, maybe I am not ready for the NHL.
And a healthy scratch doesn't?
I think it sends a more prove me wrong message to Zach Cassian, then what if they send him down to Utica?
Okay. Well, I look at Cody Hodson, and to me, he made the team probably before his time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the expectation to be a top-performing center in a team that he couldn't be a first- or second-line center on. There's just no way that he's going to become the second-line center over Kessler or first-line center over Henrik, and the third-line role wasn't suited for him. It just seems to me that we're taking pieces and we're taking square pegs that are slightly round, forcing him into a round hole.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do I know? I'm only a blogger.
Yeah.
That's true.
I value your opinion.
But the player, though, I think we've seen most of is Mike Santarelli.
Yeah.
Slow down a bit.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, fair enough, but think of how quick he came out of the gate. This is a guy who pretty much, he met all targets in, like, the first month of the season.
Yeah, but eventually the luster of that wears off, and it has. The bloom has come off the rose a little bit here, right? Right?
That's good. That's good.
The bloom has come off the rose? The petals have fallen?
Yes. We've blown the doors off the roof.
Wow, it's like straight from a song from Seal.
Look at him. One goal in his last 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
So?
It's not second-line production, is it?
I was just going to say, so where does he fit?
Third line.
He's a better third-line player. But I think that we were disillusioned into believing that he could be a second-line player.
Well, that's Canucks fans' expectations.
Yeah, who anointed him a second-line center?
Well, I think the expectations rose once we saw him get out of the gates. And fairly or unfairly, most of us knew he would eventually cool off.
This is a player who was brought to the team on a two-way contract that was well-suited for him to be in Utica and called up when we needed him.
You like sending guys to Utica, don't you?
Well, no, I'm just saying that...
Chris wants to go to Utica.
Yeah, I've never been. Maybe it's a nice place. I don't know. But he outperformed in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone saw that. He worked his way onto a team, and I don't think he's done anything to get himself off this team.
No, and yeah, for everything he hasn't done offensively, he's still a good penalty killer. He's still a pretty good checker. Like, we've seen him in the past, in the last minute of games defending a lead. He's been out there quite often defending a lead. So that shows you the trust that John Tortorella has in Mike Santarelli. So for everything he hasn't done on the score sheet, he has had some peripheral things that have made him still a very serviceable player for the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should ever be pegging him as a second-line player when in reality, he's just a pretty decent third-line winger.
No, and he is. He's a third-line player. Don't get me wrong. It's just that we all of a sudden found this instance where it worked on the second line because we didn't have much else. We put Kessler up on the first line, so really it was him or Richardson that was going to center that. But he's meant to be on the third line. It was same as Richardson was meant to be on the third line, fourth line.
Yeah.
So in the absence of that second line center, he was able to acquit himself well. That's all I'm saying. But I just like to point out, at 17 points, that's not too shabby, especially coming from your third line, just over a third of the season.
Yeah, all right. I'll give you that.
But Edler, we're gonna get there.
We already talked about Alex Edler.
Yeah,
we didn't talk about him.
No, yeah.
Do we?
I don't know. He's dash 12.
He needs to play his way out of the funk.
Oh, okay.
And he needs to score on the power play.
Healthy scratch?
I mean, easier said than done. No.
Send me Utica.
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm curious.
Send a charter.
I think that's the name of our podcast.
That is the name of the podcast.
No, let's be serious here. Cassian going to Utica to continue to develop as a younger player, I think, is well served. Alex Edler needs more than a tongue lashing.
He got that from John Tortorella, didn't he?
Yeah.
John Tortorella was just doing what I think a lot of Canucks fans were thinking.
Oh, he's a complete liability right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Maybe that's what he needs as his Erhoff for.
Nicole, Erhoff, what do you think about offense?
Are you liking what you're seeing from Edler?
I'm not liking what I'm seeing right
okay.
now. No. I'm a fan of him, but his performance so far, not so much.
Do you think that there's any possibility he's having trouble living up to the burden of a $5 million a year contract?
I think that could be part of it. I think it's also...
It does coincide, does it not?
Yeah, it does. Passion.
Yeah?
I don't see the passion. I don't see the heart on ice as we have in the past with him.
Okay.
I trust Nicole.
Yeah, I do. I want to be a little half full on Edler. It says here his face-off percentage is 100%. When the heck did Alex Edler take a face-off?
But he's 100%.
He's 100%.
Like, really?
Yeah.
That's
amazing.
So it must have been like a 5-on-3 or something like that. And whoever was on the ice as the center got waved out with 2
I never got to take face-offs as a kid.
So all we need to do is score more than 3 goals in a game and put Alex Edler.
Yeah, he should be our face-off
that's
man.
That's the recipe 100%. For a puck possession team.
It is.
Okay. Well, seeing as I can't send the next guy to Utica, Burrows. Is this guy snake bit?
Nicole, you already hinted at, you've mentioned him a couple times during this podcast.
Yeah.
Do share.
Alex Burrows used to be the guy on the ice who you knew would score a goal every couple games. He would go on a streak, 6-7 games, and we have not seen much of him at all this season.
Well, he's hit posts.
He's hit a lot of posts.
Do you remember the time when he scored back-to-back hat tricks?
There you go.
Yeah.
Holy!
Remember his
like
first year up with the team?
Distant memory.
His first year up with the team, playing with Bertuzzi. And...
Oh. Where has that Alex Burrows gone?
I don't remember it, so I must be old.
For the record, still stuck on 0 after 17 games played.
He's getting power play time?
He's getting ample power play time.
First line, second line.
Yeah, he's played with the Sedins.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, I don't think he's played poorly. I mean, if you take offense out of the equation, he's played quite well.
Yeah.
It's just for whatever reason, he can't get a goal. If the net was empty, he'd probably ring it off the crossbar. That's just how he's going right now.
So what happens if we get to a couple games in, or let's say even tonight against the Predators? What happens if he scores? Do the floodgates open?
Well, it happened for David Booth.
Amen.
In a manner of speaking, yeah. I mean, the thing is, when you're stuck on 0 goals and the games continue to go along, that weight just sort of gets heavier and heavier
it's
for you.
Game.
It is. And with Alex Burrows, you can tell that he's gripping the stick really tight. He's just anxious to get that first one because he knows that once he gets that first one, the weight is off, and then everything else will just sort of come naturally from there. So I understand what he's going through, But again, it's getting that first one is always the toughest one.
And it's really funny you make that point, Matt, about getting that first one, because you've never heard a player break a streak and say, oh, it was no big deal. Yeah, it just, I knew it was going to come. No, they always say, it was great to get the monkey off my back. Oh, now I'm looking forward to just kind of moving past this. So yes, I do. The floodgates, you know, it's a relative term. I don't think they're going to burst open, but it will only work wonders for his confidence. It has to.
And being in those scrums day in and day out with him, that's the first question he's asked by reporters is, when is he going to score? So that does, it does play a mental game. It
doesn't help that Chris Tanev has one more goal than Alex Burrows does. And I'm a big Chris Tanev fan.
Well, if we're looking at people who have more goals than Alex Burrows, Tom Sestito has two. Dale Weiss has two.
Jeremy Welsh has one.
I think Alex Burrows looks around and he's like, I can't believe this guy has more goals than me.
Yeah, to me, I think it's just a matter, you get the one. Like, yeah, you, to your point, Clay, players get a goal. It could be the craziest goal, bounced off, six different things went in the net. But I got credit for it, my slump's over, and all of a sudden, it's the valve releases, the pressure is gone, and then goals start to occur, or whatever the streak or slump happened to be is broken.
Really quick before we get to the look ahead, do you believe that the first goal is coming soon? He's getting great chances.
Relative soon is what?
Within the next five games.
Yes.
Sure, I will say in the next five games, Burrows will have scored one goal. Minimum.
That's how low the bar has become for Alex Burrows now.
Yes.
Previewing all the upcoming games for the Vancouver Canucks, it's the look ahead.
Speaking of the next five games, my friends, the Canucks have two coming up against teams surrounding them in the Western Conference. Not two of the most exciting teams around, but they start tonight in Nashville, concluding their four-game road trip. Already a 2-1 road trip, not bad so far, against the 10th place Predators, who will be without their all-star, Shea Weber, who suffered an eye injury last week. What can we expect from tonight's game? Matt, let's start with you.
It's an important game. For whatever reason, I guess it goes back to the 2011 second round. Predators fans do not like the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe it's Ryan Kessler they in particularly don't like, but I think the Canucks get up for those kind of games with fans that don't like them. So I'm curious to see how they respond tonight, specifically Ryan Kessler. There is some importance again because they're in 10th place, so this is a team that the Canucks are competing with in the West. So anytime you're playing a Western Conference opponent, there's always 2 points that are very valuable for grabs. So to end a road trip, yeah, it's pretty important that they get the 2 points.
I'm curious. Predators fans don't like the Canucks? Like, is this another Minnesota Wild rivalry where it was a much bigger event in Minnesota when the Canucks were in town?
Well, if I recall, like, I think they have some axe to grind. The other thing might be Dan Hamhuis leaving the Predators for Vancouver.
Yeah, but they got to keep Weber, and we were trying to get him, too.
It's a little if you beat them to the punch, though. Yeah. I don't know. I think there is a genuine disliking of the Canucks. Maybe that's league-wide, too, though.
Well, if you were to go and say everyone hates the Canucks, it appears that way. It's the cool thing.
Can you vouch for this?
My perspective on the game?
I mean, you must get tweets from other fans.
We do.
So do Predators fans have a hate for the Canucks at all?
I would put them probably middle of the pack.
Really? Okay.
So it's exaggerated by me, as usual. A little bit. It's okay. Wait,
compare Nashville fans to Phoenix fans, who will be the next Canucks opponent later in the week. Phoenix fans, do they chirp at us?
Nashville ahead. Nashville. Yeah. But from my perspective, for the game heading back home, I mean, we don't play until Friday night, and we play in Rogers Arena, so I do think it is important to get the points.
All right, so they wrap up the road trip. Did you want to say something else?
Oh, I was just going to say, they better get the 2 points on the road, because they're not going to get any when they get back home.
So let's talk about that this Friday.
Well, you get the joke. They're horrible at home. They're better on the road.
So they return to Rogers Arena, and they host Phoenix to start a five-game homestand. And Phoenix and Vancouver are very close in the standings. Phoenix has 3 games in hand right now, and they are 1 point up. So obviously, like you said, Matt, another very important potential four-point swing game in the Western Conference. What can we expect from this? Chris?
Well, first of all, who doesn't have games in hand on the Canucks right now?
Oh, we talked about this last time.
I know.
Yeah, like
only Winnipeg is equal with us right now.
It's like we start to celebrate, like, oh, yeah, we're doing well on the road, and then we look at, oh, look, they all have games on hand. Yeah. Crap. I think the Canucks need to, just as we need the points out of Nashville, we need the points out of Phoenix. At some point in time, the Canucks need to start rattling off a string of wins to get themselves back into the playoff picture. And you look how competitive the West is. at this point in time, we need those points to get ourselves into the fight. We can't go and waste all the energy and effort at the end of the season trying to get that last playoff spot.
And Phoenix was, at the start of the season, one of those teams that a lot of people predicted the Canucks would be in that dogfight for a playoff spot with. I don't want to say this is a must-win game in December, but again, Phoenix being up three games in hand with a point ahead of the Canucks, there's a mental thing where the Canucks need to make up some ground here on the Coyotes. So for it to be the beginning of a five-game homestand, I feel like it's as close to a must-win game for December as it gets.
Nicole, I'm just curious, given your unique perspective, is there anything that happens that's different or different buzz around the arena when it's the first game back after a couple of weeks away or a week and a half away? Is there anything that's different from your perspective, or is it just business as usual, the next one kind of next game to go sort of thing?
I think it's first game back. I think it's Friday night, and Paul Bissonnette's in town. So it's always a fun time.
Who's that? Paul Bissonnette.
Bissnasty.
Oh.
There you go.
Sorry. I heard something else for some reason.
Oh, don't say it.
No, it nothing bad.
It will get you in a draw, which is unfortunate.
2 nights later, they play against another Western Conference opponent. This is actually Colorado. Colorado's come back to the middle of the pack a little bit, but that's also because they played a lot less games than everyone else. They're 9-2 away from home, so a very strong record.
Wow, 9-2 on the road?
Yeah, Colorado.
That is impressive.
It is very impressive. And they're faltering a bit, but they're still good. They're fifth in the West, and like I said, they're another team that maybe we thought we'd be lower at the start of the year, but they got off to that awesome start. So what can we expect, Matt, from Colorado coming in and all their young guns?
This is, again, it's another mental battle because, like you said, the Canucks weren't expecting Colorado, or I don't think anyone really was expecting Colorado to be as good as they are. So for the Canucks, if I'm playing for the Canucks, I'm thinking to myself, we have to send a message to Colorado that they're still in the Western Conference, this is still a very competitive conference, and they're going to have to earn a playoff spot if they want to be in the playoffs. So for them, they have to take the Avalanche down a peg or two here, because I think the Avs are very confident in themselves, and if they can take 2 points at home from them, I think it does send a message to them that things will be tough the rest of the way.
Is this Avalanche team much different from last year's Avalanche team, where the Canucks beat them up?
That's right.
And you look at the Canucks' record against Northwest Division teams last year, and they beat every single one of them up.
Well, the big difference has been Patrick Waugh behind the bench. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it really says something when a guy who's got that kind of legacy steps behind your bench, and I think that a lot of these players want to play for a guy like that. So I don't want to say he's been the total difference, but I think he's been a big part of the reason why they've had the success they've had.
And that bubble seems to have burst. And case in point, look at the Edmonton Oilers out of the gate 2 seasons ago, as well as the lockout shortened season. They come out of the gate quick, young team, playing for a coach they feel they need to produce for. Bubble bursts. And next thing you know, the Oilers are getting themselves a relatively awesome draft lottery pick.
So you don't buy the Avalanche's playoff team?
Well, I'm not saying they're not a playoff team. I simply feel that they're now getting back to where they were last year. They weren't much of a team. They're not much different than they were last year, and that's a game I think the Canucks should beat because it's that Northwest Division rival.
Nicole, let's go to rivalries again here. Is the rivalry with the Avalanche a little bit dead now, the fact that they're in different divisions?
I do see it as if they're dead. I mean, we don't see them as often, so it's just a natural fit right there. What I was going to say, though, is Sunday, Monday, you have two back-to-back, Colorado, Carolina. Who starts in net? Do we care who starts in net? Does Luongo get both starts, or does Lack face Carolina again?
Oh, that is a good question.
I think Luongo gets the Colorado start.
Yeah, I agree. I see Luongo doing Friday, Sunday, and then giving Monday's game to Lack. He just beat them, you know, a couple days ago. I want to notice if Mike Komisarek's going to, you know, grow up and mature a bit before he comes back.
Or does Carolina now know how to play against Eddie Lack, and now they're going to throw Luongo in
there? It won't be as easy as it was the last time they played the Hurricanes.
Why not?
Well, that tends to be the case. When the Canucks jumped out to the quick start they did against the Hurricanes, it won't be as easy the second time, because the team will be prepared for it.
And well, the coach makes a decision. Mm-hmm. If you were to go and ask Luongo, who's the starting goaltender,
he would want both games.
Well, he would want both, but I'm giving you one. Which one do you want? Which does he take?
Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the more important game.
Yeah, to me, he takes Colorado. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why.
Yeah.
And I think you play Lack against Carolina. I think the Colorado points are actually points you need.
Yep.
The Carolina points, if you didn't get them, while the Canucks still need them, you'd be willing to potentially give up if you had to choose.
Time-wise, the schedule favors Luongo playing 3 out of those 4 games because, again, they're playing tonight against Nashville. They'll come back home, I'm assuming, right away. Nicole, can you verify that?
They will come home right away.
So they will be in their own beds tonight.
And how many people are going to go out to the airport to try to welcome
them? I don't know. Depends on what the result of the game is tonight, I guess. Yeah.
Except the
But, I mean, again, they'll have their own beds to sleep in tonight, and then they'll get maybe a day off tomorrow. Wednesday?
I don't know.
Sure. And so Luongo will have a bit of rest, so he'll have the Wednesday off, and then he'll have Friday, and then I think he'll get the call again on Sunday.
But speaking of that Monday game, someone else is coming home.
Manny Malhotra!
Yeah.
For the first time. That took me with an A on his chest.
I noticed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, I as a player, I love Manny, and I wish him nothing but success. I'm still somewhat curious about his ability to play, and if he can, awesome. You obviously know he's going to get a warm welcome when he comes here, but considering how well he's done this season, and I was listening to the radio broadcast, and they were saying how none of the hockey observers in Carolina are seeing any of what the Canucks saw of Manny last season.
Wow, that's pretty harsh. Oh, you mean as in...
As like the
liability
on the ice. Oh, yeah, I didn't mean as...
It's positive. Sorry, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
If you go back in time, do you wish Manny was still in the Canucks?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I think that Manny Malhotra brought things that could not be brought on the ice alone.
Okay, now, Fancy Stats tells you that that doesn't exist.
As in, leadership can't be equated at all? Or
exactly.
Something?
Like it.
No, I mean, that's a bunch of BS.
Well, that's what I think so, too, but I also know I can't count to three. So.
There is something to be said about playing alongside a guy who you deeply respect.
Leadership.
Okay. Exactly. And that gives a team overall, I believe, a bit more of a push than you would normally get if it was anyone else.
Sure.
And in my case, Manny Malhotra, I believe, is one of those few players in the NHL who you would say, I'm proud to have that guy as my teammate. So losing Malhotra, I think, was more of a blow than just what he brought to the Canucks in terms of face-offs and penalty kills.
Nicole, you have a unique perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the team misses Manny in the locker room?
From my perspective, I think he was one of the kindest individuals in the locker room during his time here. So personally, we absolutely miss him.
Wow.
Yeah.
And see, I'm telling you.
And I totally agree with you. I'm simply trying to play devil's advocate when I say Fancy Stats says leadership doesn't exist. And then those who quote Fancy Stats, as soon as you say leadership in the locker room means something, will quote he who shall not be named and his tenure with the team, because he all brought leadership and it didn't turn into much of anything.
Yeah. Oh, more of a mess.
Yeah, it was quite a big mess.
What a mess that was.
Then the Canucks wrap up the week hosting the Edmonton Oilers on Freaky Friday the 13th. And speaking of freaks, the Boston Bruins on Saturday the 14th.
Wow.
We didn't have it in the schedule here, but I am looking forward to that game.
He's wearing his yellow just to celebrate.
Oh, that was coincidence.
Yeah. Actually, you know, and it has been a while, but Clay, can you tell me what those colors are on Matt's sweater?
The purple and yellow.
Yeah. Purple and gold.
Purple and gold.
That's right. Go Steeston.
I don't know what that means.
That's okay. Clay does.
Is this an inside joke for you old
Clay
folks
knows.
From Richmond?
Clay knows.
And I feel sick.
Let's be honest, neither of you played football or anything, did you?
No, I never did.
Yeah, there you
no,
go.
No, it's not football.
It's
bigger than football. It's bigger than football.
Nicole and I are just going to ignore both of
us. At some point,
you see what I have to put up with?
At some point, this will get up on Twitter. Yeah. DeBron will get involved. Then we'll all take shots at McNairn, and Steve Ewan will get involved. Like, whoa, guys, come on.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's the only... It's funny. The Richmond grads and Steveston grads will go at it, and then we'll agree on McNair being crap.
I imagine you guys have like a secret meeting of Steveston High School people, and then right next door is the David Booth Fan Appreciation Club where Clay is hosting it by himself.
I'll find someone to come one day.
So we've reached that point in every C4CHB episode, which is always my happiest time, and that's when we get to go and ask you, our listeners, our readers, some questions on Twitter, on Facebook, get you involved. And today we asked a very... very straight up question. Are you concerned about Burrow's lack of scoring and why or why not in Ask CHB? So I'm going to jump straight up to Facebook here, and we got Chris Duffish. That's right, Chris Duffish on Facebook who answers the question about Burrow's lack of scoring, and he's like, yep, getting paid to score and isn't. We need goals.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not. That's...
I think we've set our pieces on Alex Burrows, but yeah, he's not wrong.
From Twitter, we got Jared Thompson, who replies to the question, I'm cold. Brr.
That's creative.
That was clever. Very good, Jared Thompson.
I must want to give him the two tickets.
Yeah, Jared Thompson at JThompsonDesign on Twitter. And you want to give him the two sweet tickets for that?
No. We'll make it a little harder, I guess.
Okay. If he enters the contest.
True.
That's right. Brittany Goujon, I hope I got your name right, who's at BritCA on Twitter. She's actually not worried yet. Saving the goal in the last game for Lat keeps my hopes alive. So is saving a goal, preventing a goal from being scored like he did, equivalent to scoring a goal?
That's the defenseman's cop-out. I remember Willie Mitchell used to say that all the time when he was with the Canucks, is that every time he prevented a goal, it was like scoring a goal for his team. Burrows is a forward. He has to score the goals.
Score some goals.
I mean, preventing goals is a bonus, but no, he's got to score goals.
Okay. Well?
Really quickly, you're not worried?
I'm not.
You want to send him down? If you had the ability to send him down,
you know, can't. I don't like you, Nicole.
Thanks.
Nicole's the
you
best.
You and I are not my friend. You're not my friend
anymore. Nicole, you're welcome back.
Come back anytime. All right.
You're not worried?
No, I'm not worried. Like I said, it's the whole proverbial monkey off the back.
Yeah, I'm not worried either. Cool. No?
Not worried.
Okay.
You know, I need some encouragement. Hook me up, Clay.
Garth, that was a haiku.
All right, Chris's favorite is Ask CHB. My favorite is CHB Haiku, the power of the 575 17-syllable creations. Nicole, this might be new to you, but basically I read a haiku, then we get instant analysis. Today I have three. There are three of you, so one each. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. So Kate Ellison at Queen of Stout tweeted at us, and here's her haiku. Matt, this one's for you. No, Chris, this one's for you. One goal games won't work, even in the preseason. Lou can't do it all. Instant reaction, Chris.
I think she's saying, Nate, we need to send Luongo to Utica.
Thank you, Kate.
I don't agree with it, but that's where the haiku's going.
Thank you, Kate. Good 17-syllable creation. I want to throw a couple because I'm quite proud of these ones. Nicole, instant reaction for you. My man, David Booth, 3 points in the last three games. Things are looking up.
That would be your favorite, wouldn't it?
Did you write that yourself?
Yeah.
I knew you did because you no one in the right frame of mind would write that.
Well, I'm asking Nicole's opinion, not yours.
Oh, that's why you gave it.
What do you think?
Things are looking up. Injury-free, things are looking up.
Okay. And Matt, this one's for you. I wrote this one too. You ready?
If it's David Booth, I'm going to be upset.
No, here we go. Seems like Torts gets mad more often with more vigor. Screen caps on repeat.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's harsh but true.
Thank you. So, as always, we tweet out the day of our podcast. We look for 17-syllable creations. We don't really count or add them up. So, as long as they're within the 17 ballpark, we'll read them. Thank you. See you next time. CHB Haiku.
Really quick.
Yeah.
Both either you or Nicole want to say something again on the next tweet up and where it'll be?
Well, I think Nicole can tell us all about the next tweet. We talked about it at the start, but let's talk about what happens at tweet ups, Nicole.
We watch the game as fans. It's a viewing party. Give away some tickets. Bada bing, bada boom. So the next one is being held at Boston Pizza in North Vancouver at the Esplanade location, December 19th. It's a 5:30 puck drop.
Is Palliser back?
Palliser is back.
Oh, thank
you
God.
Heard it here first. Chris Palliser is back as the host at BP Lonsdale, so it doesn't have to be me ever again.
You're welcome back anytime.
You
don't
have to sound so sad about it, Chris.
Well, you know what? I'm
Nicole's right here.
I'm a glass half empty kind of guy, and you know.
We balance each other out.
Yeah. We do.
Let's get to the next point.
The next point, which is reasons why Matt is better than everyone at everything.
I don't know who put that there.
No, not at all. Not at all. But I know how you can be better than Matt. That's by winning that contest for those two tickets.
Absolutely. We'd love to see you at the game on December 22nd against the Winnipeg Jets. Their first time back, as Matt said earlier, in who knows how many years. Just read the description on this blog post about how you can enter and how you can be, entered in the chance to win.
Well, it's not
sit with us.
It's not this post. We're actually going to put a separate post promoting the contest. But if you listen to this podcast and you listen clearly, like we're talking word for word, you have a great chance of winning because that's how you're going to be able to enter. Is we're going to ask a question based on what we said today. You're going to tell us that answer on our form, which is going to be on a separate contest post. We'll also throw in a free bonus entry for those who provide us the answer by going on the Twitter, and we'll give you the script and what you need to do. But you need to actually tweet a picture of you wearing your craziest Christmas sweater.
And I know this, no matter what you tweet us, it's going to be a lot better than what Matt is wearing right now.
Whoa!
Now, I'm sorry, but I actually like Matt's purple and gold.
This is my hockey team sweater.
Yeah, his hockey team's cool.
Okay, so that sweater has to be ugly. I want to see ugly sweaters.
Ugly Christmas sweaters. Can you Photoshop someone's face on the ugly Christmas sweater?
No Photoshop. We'll know.
It's gonna be natural.
We'll have our pro Victoria take a look to see if it's Photoshopped or not.
So that limits Wyatt.
Wyatt, you're disqualified. Wyatt
Stanchion, if you're listening, you're disqualified.
Because they want to be in the suite with us.
Yeah. Well, they do. I mean, it's better than the suite they're in some other times. It's a different type of suite.
We will know, Wyatt, enemy podcast.
That's right. You didn't hear it from us, but that legion of blogs.
Shots have been fired, Wyatt.
But yeah, back to the contest. Two tickets, suite night with us at CHB. It's going to be a fantastic time. That's courtesy of the Vancouver Canucks, courtesy of Nicole. We got to bring her out to podcast more often, I think.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
You upped our average looks, our average class.
You certainly mitigated some of the damage that Chris and Clay have done while being here.
Yeah.
We should have you here more often.
I have a better outfit than Matt, so.
I like her now.
By virtue of you wearing clothes, you have a better outfit than Matt.
This is a horrible podcast.
Well, I hope not, because the other thing I do want to ask that everyone do before we get to our final words is go to iTunes, subscribe, leave us some fantastic feedback. If it's not that fantastic, let us know. Give us a star rating. Leave us comments. We love that. In fact, if you do leave us comments on iTunes, we will do our best to give you a shout out, good, bad, or indifferent. You could say that Matt is horrible, and I would still give you some love on this podcast. But please, go do that.
Send Matt to Utica.
Yeah, I'll send Matt to Utica.
With a sweater.
With a sweater. But final words, Matt.
I love my sweater.
Yeah?
Screw you guys.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Cool. Clay.
Nashville, Phoenix, Colorado, and Carolina. Not the four most exciting teams ever, but a chance to pick for the Canucks to pick up maybe six points or more.
I did want to say one more thing. Mm-hmm. Shikarik and Bo Horvat are on the Canadian World Junior roster camp. Are they both going to make it? Really quickly.
Yes.
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 Yeah, okay. It's a sweep.
Okay. Any more final words before you know?
Just that.
Nicole.
We're good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, thanks for coming out. You know, it's actually, thank you for inviting us to Mike Gillis's office where we happen to be recording this podcast from.
It's a lot bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah, nice. It totally is. It looks a lot like my place.
Luxurious.
In Steveston. But yes, this is Mike Gillis's office. Yes. My final words, pretty exciting time. This whole sweet night contest. I really enjoyed the podcast. I think we got to get guests like Nicole out more often. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay, well, guess what? We're out. And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us, amateurs.